there are two immediate objectives, it seems to me. One is to stop the flow of the ISIS southward towards Baghdad and the holy cities. And secondly, then help the Iraqis recapture the major cities, Fallujah, Mosul, and Tikrit. So that means some form of military assistance, I think, will be necessary.
Would you include boots on the ground?
There's a difference between having combat soldiers on the ground, which is not what I would be calling for, and having boots on the ground. If you think about stopping the southward flow, manned aircraft can do a certain amount to the lines of communications of ISIS. But if you talk about recovering the cities, basically you're going to have to use drones. And for either of those operations, you need good intelligence. And that means on-the-ground spotters and fire control people.
Americans, in other words.
I think that would probably mean some Americans on the ground.
Are you in favor of effectively making Iran an American ally? You'll have seen what President Rouhani has said. He will provide assistance if he sees Washington intervene. And the implication is that he is prepared to work alongside the United States, should the United States be prepared to work alongside Iran.
I think at bottom we do have a shared interest in a stable and united Iraq. It is possible that if we don't intervene and if the ISIS moves around and south of Baghdad towards the holy cities, I think the Iranians would see an opportunity and perhaps even a need to intervene directly to protect the holy cities. So we may get backed into a situation where we are, in effect, working with the Iranians. I don't exclude it.
Iraq is presenting the world with a massive crisis. How much responsibility does the United States bear, not only for the invasion, but for the way the occupation was carried out in the years that followed that invasion?
We were the leader, so we have the primary responsibility. But any argument that somehow it would have been better to leave Saddam in power, it seems to me, cannot be sustained. It simply isn't credible. We would today be facing a nuclear-armed Iraq with a nuclear-armed Iran, and we would have seen Saddam continue his murderous policy towards the Iraqi people.
Whether it would have become a nuclear-armed Iraq is bound, obviously, to be speculative at this stage. What is a matter of hard, cold fact is that the occupation was conducted in such a way that it led to, if not positively encouraged, these events that we are facing today.
I don't think that statement is correct.
Well, you yourself ran Iraq effectively as President Bush's representative and head of the Coalition Provisional Authority. You gave two very important orders. You sacked the 50,000 members of the ruling Ba'ath Party from their jobs, civil servants and so on, and you disbanded the Iraqi army. You threw 400,000 men onto the streets with their weapons. Some of those men have now come back to fight against the Iraqi government.
Well, let's take the army first. There was no army to disband when I got there. As the Pentagon reported, basically the army had gone home. So the question was whether we should recall the army. The one time during the year and a half I was there that a Marine commander decided to try to recall part of the army, he recalled a brigade in Fallujah, and it was a total failure. They went immediately over and fought against us. Secondly, we trained a new army, and by the time I left, 75% of the officers and NCOs were in fact vetted members of Saddam's old army. The idea that they were put on the streets with no jobs is simply untrue. We made arrangements so that every single member of the enlisted part of the army, the draftees, was given a severance pay. All of the officers, except the very top ones, were given an annual pension, which was calculated by us to be more than they would have gotten from Saddam Hussein. And finally, that trained Iraqi army, with American help, was able to defeat al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was defeated by 2009.
Let me quote to you what Christopher Mayer, Britain's ambassador to the United States at the time, said about that specific order of yours. The order, he said, he wrote this morning, directly fueled the eight-year insurgency against American and allied troops.
I don't exclude that some of the members of the former army took up arms against the occupation. But if they did that, it wasn't because they didn't get money. They did get money. It was because they didn't want to take part in a new Iraq where the government was elected.
It's terribly hard to see, though, isn't it, how you can regard, if this is what you're saying, if I'm not misrepresenting you, how you can suggest that the occupation was in any way, shape or form a success, given what subsequently happened in Iraq and what is happening there today, apart from the fact that a vast number of people have died.
Let's look at the situation in two slices. Let's look at it from 2003 to 2011. During that period, Iraq drafted and adopted by referendum the most liberal constitution anywhere in the Arab world. They conducted successfully five separate elections during that time, more than any Arab country has ever had. The key turning point in the analysis was the withdrawal of American troops at the end of 2011, which had the foreseeable consequences that we're seeing right now. The failure was after 2011.
But can't you go a little bit deeper than that as well? Can't you conclude from what's happened that because political parties in Iraq have, over the ages, formed along ethnic and religious lines, democracy that we are so proud of and that we want to sell to the rest of the world has deepened the sectarianism and led to what, again, to what we are seeing today?
Removing Saddam effectively upended a thousand-year Sunni domination of the lands of Mesopotamia. It was a political revolution. Any student of history knows that political revolutions take a long time to settle out. It's hard work. It took us quite a while. We had to fight a civil war, and even the civil war itself didn't resolve our problems. We're still working to fix our democracy. So one should never assume that this whole idea of moving from dictatorship to democracy is easy. It's not.
It's hard to find a credible senior political figure, certainly on this side of the Atlantic, who would say that the invasion of Iraq and the subsequent opposition was anything other than a catastrophic error. And what is happening now is that we are reaping the rewards of that in the most awful way imaginable.
The big error was leaving too soon, in effect. I argued 10 years ago that I thought history would judge not that we stayed too long, but that we left too early. And I think the events of the last few weeks tend towards that view.
Paul Bremer, many thanks.